Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills, indeed, is second to none. And yes, there are specials at Brewers Outlet between now and New Year's Eve. And Sean, of course, sent me the playoff scenarios. Got that, Sean. But the Brewers Outlet specials between now and New Year's Eve. Miller Lite 30-pack can, $17.95. Founders All Day IPA, 15-pack cans, $14.95. And Seagram's Coolers, 12-pack, just $10.99. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Great to have you with us here today. Tom Leach, the play-by-play voice of Kentucky football today. Eli Gold, play-by-play voice of Alabama football today. They play tomorrow, obviously, Alabama does, against Oklahoma in the national semifinals at the Orange Bowl in Miami Lakes. And then we'll have Rich Scarsella, Reading Eagle, at 4:06. The King joins us for picks because it is Friday. It's going to be interesting to see what we go with pick-wise this week. The final pivotal week of the regular season. And then our next show after this will be Wednesday. No show New Year's Eve. Sean's New Year's Eve parties usually start at 10 a.m. The police are usually there a little bit after that. So there you go. And then they join the party. It's really great. And we'll do our picks today. And the bowl picks, I'm getting crushed. I've made a little bit of a comeback, but I'm getting crushed. So, simple as that. I am in last place.
I have those updated standings from Sean from after last night.
Geez, I hope I picked Auburn today. Because Auburn's all over Purdue 49-7.
Well, that I don't have in front of me. Yeah, I didn't expect that. Actually, I may have expected that.
Neither did Purdue.
Maybe not quite as a blowout like that, but I thought Auburn was a better team. But anyway, Sue's 14-6. Sean is 12-8. King is 12-8. You, Steve, are 9-11 now after yesterday's ball games.
Okay, who hosts this show? I mean, really, do we have the wrong people? That's what I want to know. We have the wrong people on the show here. It sounds like they ought to be doing it. They're the experts. So, oh, my goodness. Well, we'll do our picks today at the end of the show. But coming up, we will talk with Tom Leach, the play-by-play voice of Kentucky football, as we continue. Brought to you by Brewers Outlet here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay. Let's get to it here with Tom Leach, the play-by-play voice of, and just for him, we eliminated the sports bozo of the day because I didn't want him to feel bad about any of that. Tom, welcome. It is great to have you with us on the show today as obviously we get ready for the game coming up on Tuesday. And we'll try and get in touch with Tom here in just a few moments here and get this rolling for you. And then we'll talk to Eli Gold in the next half hour. So we're looking forward to that. and an opportunity to talk with them about their respective teams. Kentucky looking for its first 10-win season since 1977.
Happy to do it. I was afraid I was the bozo of the day for a minute.
No, that's okay. You have no idea how every day I sit here and listen to him say that and wonder if I'm going to make the cut or not this week. So I always wonder that myself.
I can imagine feeling. I'm the same way.
Hey, you know what? This has been quite a year for them. Let's talk about Mark Stoops. He's been given time to get to this point. What has that meant, and what should it tell us about the Kentucky administration about how much they understand about the toughness of the job?
Mitch Barnhart's the longtime AD here, and when he had to hire a coach, he wanted to find somebody, turns out obviously like Mark, that had a defensive background, that came from a winning program, and hiring a coach to walk into, which was a roster that was really depleted, and he was going to have to build that roster up in a very difficult league with the probably smallest recruiting base in that league in the state of Kentucky. So you have to credit Mitch for having, I think, a long-term view. I don't think there were stories written about, you know, hot seat and coaches on hot seat, and Stoops' name came up there, and going into his fourth year, I don't think he was ever in any danger of losing his job at that point. But eventually you got to win, and he did in year four, and it's just moved forward from there. But credit the AD for having a, you know, a long-term view. And also he's an AD that, you know, had success and done a nice job with picking coaches, and so had, you know, the equity in his job that he could afford to be patient.
Explain to us, as somebody who has the privilege of watching him every day, Josh Allen, why he's so effective, and what is the domino effect that Josh Allen has on the rest of the defense?
A really neat story. Played in Alabama through his junior year of high school, and played, I think, basketball as well as football, and then there was a family situation that caused him to move to New Jersey, and he kind of got lost in the shuffle as far as the camps and the rating services, etc. And so he's up in Jersey, and his high school coach can't get anybody to take a look at him, and even Rutgers, the state university. And so he's got one offer from Monmouth to play college football, and then Kentucky has a guy decommit. I can't even remember who it was, but they had a scholarship open at the last minute, and so they had some discussion with this guy up in Jersey, and so Josh ends up coming down to visit, and they like the tape. They bring him down for a visit and immediately offer him a scholarship, and he was like, you know, kind of looked a little bit like a basketball player, 6'5", about 220 probably. Had to play as a freshman because of Kentucky's roster situation at the time, and has just steadily gotten bigger, stronger, worked harder, really has become, in addition to being a better athlete, he's studied the craft of the position he's playing. And so he's now 6'5", 260, great speed. They use him in coverage some. And he's taken on a leadership role this year. He became a father last year, about a week before the time to announce that whether he would go into the draft or not. And he would have gotten drafted last year, but it would have been probably second day. And he decided he didn't want to lose that first year with his son. It was part of the reason he decided to come back. And, boy, has it ever paid off for him. It's a really neat story.
What's the domino effect? How much he'll get attention. He'll make his own plays, but he'll get a lot of attention. What's the domino effect been on the defense just by his mere presence out there?
There was a guy Kentucky had actually played against the Nittany Lions up there in State College in 77, Art Still.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
I was a witness.
Teams would run their offenses away from Art, and Art probably could have been deployed in the way that Josh is, you know, if he had, you know, played in this time when, you know, there's zone blitzes and things where defensive linemen drop back into coverage that they didn't do then. But, you know, Josh, I don't know that he had quite the impact from a standpoint of the other team running their offense away from him like it happened with Art, but he was a guy who commanded extra attention so that, you know, the linebacker on the other side, Boogie Watson, had several sacks. I think he made their, certainly their coverage better, with the attention teams had to pay for him. They had to, you know, keep a linebacker or a tight end or a running back in to chip at least, if not double team. So it took somebody else out of the pass pattern. And then there are times that Josh would drop into coverage and ended up getting some pass breakups in addition to the other things you know, a lineman or a linebacker normally gets credit for statistically.
If I recall, Terry Wilson at one point had been at Oregon, then went JC, and then ended up at Kentucky. What has he meant to how they want to run the offense?
It was a quarterback competition, and Terry is the guy, I think, that could, of the two that were competing, could do more damage with his legs, and I think that's what ultimately was part of the thing that swung the victory his way in the quarterback competition. He's arguably one of the probably three fastest guys on the team. And so early in the year especially, they have the they do a lot of the read option with Benny Snell. And so you have to really respect the quarterback pulling it out and getting out on the edge with Terry Wilson. Or if they line up in the Wildcat and they bring Terry Wilson in motion, then you have to really, you know, stretch your defense out a little bit horizontally to account for his speed. And so it gave them, I think, an ability to help create some more space for Benny Snell running the football, which is really what their offense has been built around for probably the last 2.5 years. And then Terry has – the one thing he didn't do until last couple of games of the season is hit on some deep balls. That's the thing that they were hoping to, I think, have a bigger part of their offense this year, is those explosive passing plays off the running game. And they haven't quite done that to the extent that they wanted to, but they did have some success in the last couple of games. So maybe it's coming.
Benny Snell, you mentioned that during the course of the answer with Terry Wilson. He's received a lot of publicity, especially in the first half of the season he did. What kind of running back is he?
He's not the fastest guy in the world. He's kind of a throwback, you know, a guy who in the 70s would have been, you know, a back that got the ball 35, 40 times a game, you know, in an I formation. He very strong. I remember his first training camp in a couple of scrimmages in August, watching him run through tackles and carry tacklers. And the first week it happened against the threes and fours, and I'm thinking to myself, well, that's pretty impressive, but let's see if he does it against the best guys. And he did the next week in the scrimmage, and then he got his chance about a third of the way into the season and has run that way. Just very, people will call it, you know, running violently or angry. He really, you know, loves running between the tackles, loves getting the ball as much as you'll give it to him. He's become a little better receiver this year. Adequate blocker and blitz pickup, etc. But kind of a throwback in terms of, you know, he'd love to get the ball 35, 40 times a game, and just very durable. Their line, I think, maybe got a little beat up in the middle of the season, and the inability to hit some of those deep throws kind of depressed his production there for a stretch in the middle part of the season. But he's been incredibly durable and been, you know, really the key that's driven this resurgence in the last three seasons.
Tom, give us an under-the-radar guy, on one on offense and one on defense, that in seeing them every day you know is critical, but maybe most fans, especially up here, would not realize.
On the defensive side, Darius West is – I just saw he got invited to the Senior Bowl this week. He was a guy that was not expected to be the force that he was in their secondary, senior that had some injury issues, and he finally was able to play a whole season and stay healthy, and really is good coming downhill, making tackles. He's got several pass breakups, so he's been an outstanding free safety. And I think probably – the other guys in the secondary, it's an all-senior secondary, but I think he's the one that probably has outperformed expectations the most of that group, would be my guess. On the offensive side, under the radar, you know, I think Lynn, I don't know that Lynn Bowden, the slot receiver, would be classified as under the radar. Their outside receivers have not not been great, frankly. You know, maybe A.J. Rose,
okay.
Who backs up Benny Snell,
yep.
Who has better speed and has a little bit of that home run threat in the run game, had a 75-yard touchdown run in the last game against Louisville, had a 55-yarder in the first game. Doesn't get a lot of chances because of the reliance on Benny, but is a guy that inherits the job probably next year and has that more of that home run speed. So maybe A.J. Rose.
All right. When I've been around Kentucky basketball, there is no program in the country, and this isn't even close, that travels better with its fans than Kentucky basketball. It's not even the same realm. What about this bowl game? What kind of, there's a lot of excitement around the program, a chance to win 10 games in the season for the first time since 77. How excited are Kentucky fans about this opportunity?
I think it'll be a huge turnout for Kentucky because it is a historic season in terms of just the 9 wins and the chance to win a 10th. And also, they have a large, their largest alumni base outside the Commonwealth of Kentucky is in Atlanta. So that's an easy drive to Orlando. And then there's a large alumni base in the state of Florida. So not just the Kentucky fans that will use the opportunity to travel from the state of Kentucky to go down to Florida on January 1st, but also the guys that have a shorter drive from the alumni standpoint, I think, will boost the turnout as well. One thing I think Kentucky fans would like me to confirm is to make sure there are no Crispin brothers on the football team.
No, there are no. No. Tom, I did that game, okay? There are no. The Crispin brothers, one's on TV, the other one is coaching outside of Philadelphia right now. But if you'd like to bring them back as honorary captains.
People still talk about the Crispin brothers.
Well, after that game was over with, there was a line of Kentucky fans that lined up to get their autograph.
That's the thing about Kentucky basketball fans. They will acknowledge somebody who is outstanding on the other team.
Joey?
Unbelievable. Tom Leach, the play-by-play voice of Kentucky football and basketball. And by the way, Joe Crispin is now coaching at Rowan, just outside of Philadelphia. Next half hour, Eli Gold will join us. And no, there will be no Crispin brothers at the game. I can guarantee you they'll be watching, but they won't be at the game. That night at Kentucky, they were celebrating the 25th anniversary of Rupp Arena. Joe Crispin had 31 points. John Crispin had a career high 26. Penn State won the game, made the Sweet 16 that year, as did Kentucky. And as the season went and Kentucky was racking up one big one after another, I looked at Dave Baker, my good friend. I said, Dave, Kentucky is the gift that just keeps on giving. Next half hour, Eli Gold, the play-by-play voice of Alabama. Tomorrow, it's Oklahoma and Alabama in the national semifinal. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere, and great specials between now and New Year's Eve. Stock up for the final weekend of the NFL. Stock up for bowl games in the college football playoff tomorrow. Stock up for New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, the Penn State Citrus Bowl game with Kentucky, all at Brewers Outlet. Great specials. Miller Lite 30-pack can, $17.95. Founders All Day IPA, 15-pack cans, $14.95. Seagram's Coolers, 12-pack, $10.99. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Our thanks to Tom Leach, the play-by-play voice of Kentucky. I will reciprocate with him on New Year's morning when I'm on his show at 9:35. Tomorrow is the college football playoff. It'll be the Cotton Bowl first between Notre Dame and Clemson, and then off to the Orange Bowl where it'll be Alabama against Oklahoma. Last week I had a chance to talk with the outstanding play-by-play voice of Alabama football, Eli Gold. Eli, it's always great to hear from you.
Well, it's my pleasure. I'm sorry we couldn't roll out a better day for you here in Alabama. This rain has kind of set in. I'm just telling everybody you brought it with you from Pennsylvania.
The last time I was here in 2010, Eli, it was the same kind of day of bad thunderstorms. I mean, it is my fault, and I know.
Well, there's the common denominator, yeah. But no, it's great to have you in our state. I was telling somebody the other day that whether it's football, basketball, whatever, Alabama and Penn State, you know, we're two of the blue bloods in the sports world, and it's not really a rivalry because we don't play you enough, and we're not geographically linked. But I never forget the respect that the fans on both sides have had for each other's university. That makes Alabama and Penn State, in whatever sport, one of the great matchups because the fans respect the other school and their players so much.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I've always told people, I said, where have you been treated the best? I said, every time I've been, this has been the fifth time I've been to Tuscaloosa. The other right. four were for football. I've always told everybody I've never been treated better than treated here. I mean,
well, it's that Southern hospitality, you know.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, people may not realize Alabama football. I was talking about this earlier, how Penn State came in here in 1990, and I was here. Right. And Gene Hollings was the coach, and Penn State won the game 9-0. But then 2 years, Gene won the national title. After they won the national title, though, there was a series of ups and downs until Nick Saban was hired.
15 years worth of Yeah, no national title or anything, not even 17 years.
So when Nick Saban came here, and now we just went through the early signing period, which didn't exist back then, but we just went through the early signing period. What were some of the things that you could tell away with Nick Saban that he wanted to emphasize? He certainly had some good holdovers from Mike Shula, but what could you tell in terms of his emphasis in recruiting early?
Well, there was line play that he wanted to work with. Going back to that time, I mean, we're talking now, what, a dozen, 13 years ago.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, he was emphasizing line play. He was looking for the best players out there. The cupboard was not bare, but it was certainly not a rich cupboard either. So he was looking for good athletes, but I do remember that line play was one of the things that he stressed at that point.
All right, so now you get to this point with this team. I felt that the defensive fronts that he's been able to put up have been among the best. What kind of difference has that made game in and game out to a domino for the whole football team?
Well, you know what it's done? He has been able, I think, Steve, one of the big keys, and you and I both know coaches, thankfully not at our respective universities, but we both know coaches who were stubborn and set in their ways, and yep. wouldn't change as the game changed and as the student-athlete and had society changed. And some of those coaches, there's one who comes to mind in the SEC who's no longer in the league because he just never could quite adjust. It was his way, take it or leave it. Well, right. What Nick Saban has done is he is smart enough, confident enough to adjust as the game changes, and as the changes in the games required different types of players. And that comes back to your question about the defensive front. When Coach Saban got here, he had success with guys like Terrence Cody. I think you may remember yep. him. He went on. We called him Mount Cody.
Yep.
Massive, massive man. You needed a full tank to drive around him. Went on to play in the NFL. But he could only play on first and second downs. He was too massive a man. Despite being a good athlete, he was not quite quick enough. He was too big to play third down passing situations and the occasional try on a fourth down conversion. Then the problem happened when the other teams started going to this hurry up offense. Well, right. You couldn't substitute in time to get Cody off and bring in a more athletic defensive lineman. So the coach just started reaping better defensive line as Terrence was, athletes nevertheless. And that has been the backbone, along with obviously an outstanding secondary, which is what Coach Saban himself coaches. That's been the backbone. And if you subscribe, you can get a pretty good look as to why, over the years, his program has been so successful.
Yeah, you and I both know you can't have longevity and long-term success unless you adapt. I mean,
yeah,
and
he's a guy who's, right. What is he, 67 years old now, which right. is not old, but he's not 37, is what I'm getting at. And the way he can relate to 17 and 18 and 19-year-old
right.
kids is believable. You know, he changes, he adapts to social media. He's, you know, all of this stuff that might not be something to do, but he has changed with society. And obviously it's paid off, and great recruiting. Again, yesterday they say the number one signing class in America. It's just remarkable to watch it.
Yeah, no, it is remarkable to watch it. That's, for example, you have James Franklin and another great recruiting class, another guy that's been
sure.
adaptable. But again, you talk about the 17-year-old. You and I both know, Eli, that being around these 18 to 23-year-olds, in a lot of ways, it keeps us young.
It does. It keeps you smiling and laughing sometimes, and it also makes you feel old sometimes. There was one instance when I was talking about something. I forget what it was, and it was just something that, to me, was, you know, very much a part of American culture. And a bunch of the kids were looking at me like I had horns on my head. They had no idea what I was talking about. And I said, "You've never heard of such and such." And they said, "No, Mr. Eli." They'll call me Mr. Eli. "No, Mr. Eli, we've never heard of him." I said, "Oh, my Lord, I'm getting old." So it keeps you young, but it also brings in the focus exactly where chronologically.
Well, it's Jack Ham made a – it was off that we were just talking on the phone. And Jack Ham and I, it made a reference to me about Jimmy Durante, and I stopped him. And I said, "You do know we're the only two people who know who he is."
Yeah, you know, I'll say something on the air, and my producer will pop into my ear. I said at one point, the guy, somebody got on a field, I forget what it was, what the circumstance, it doesn't matter. And I said, "Folks, what I did say was, he's walking away like Walter Brennan in The Real McCoys." But, and then I stopped and I said, "And those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, you can Google it."
You know what's bad about that? Is that you could say it to me and I know what you mean.
Exactly. And to me, it just came right out because that was, to me, a great point of reference. He looked like Walter Brennan, Hobble TV show. But then I added in, "And those of you who don't know what the heck I'm talking about, you can Google it." But life changes, and you have to keep up with those changes, and that's what Nick Saban has done, as have other very successful coaches over the years.
Let me ask you about Hurts. It's one thing for the outside world to assume certain things. So they assume that Jalen Hurts isn't the starter, he'll transfer. Or the assumption that Jalen Hurts will play four games and then he'll transfer. Yet he sticks it out all the way through, and when Nick Saban needed him, he stepped in there and played like Jalen Hurts. What does that tell us about the character of the young man, Eli?
Well, it tells you the world. There's no magic answer here. What you see is what you get. He is the nicest young man. He and Tua both are young men. You know, "Hello, Mr. Gold. Hello, Mr. Gold." You know, they're always greeting you. "Hey, how you doing?" You know, nice guys, good people, happy to do stuff for others. And obviously, with all of that talk that you alluded to, and we have seen others from other teams up in midseason and you know, go elsewhere, that's not the way Jalen was taught. His daddy is a coach. He respects what the team is all about. And he just, you know, stayed put. And he's a wonderful guy. And he prepared like he was going to start every single game. So when the call did come, because Tua obviously was banged up and not playing his best against Georgia, you know, Jalen just stepped in. But again, remember, here's a guy, we're not talking your basic backup quarterback here. I mean, this
right.
is not chopped liver. This is not a guy
right.
who comes in on the rarest of occasions. This man is 26-2 as a starter at Alabama. He has led the team to two championship games, you know, one national title, and you know, so we're not talking the kid who comes in and plays, you know, a mop-up role after you're up by 50 against Shippensburg State or something. We're right. talking a guy who's spectacular in his own right. So it's a unique situation, but Jalen's just a magnificent young man. He and Tua both, all the support that you're seeing them give each other, that's not phony, that's not theatrics, that's not for the benefit of the TV cameras. That's how these guys genuinely are. Both are wonderful, wonderful young.
Yeah, and that's, and Penn State had a situation like that here with Trace McSorley and Tommy Stevens. McSorley, of course, has had a great career at Penn State. Stevens is very talented, and everyone, there was an assumption made that he was going to transfer out. Never did, and Stevens has now put himself in a position to be the starter potentially next year.
Sure.
But yeah, so I mean, you see guys like that. You know, it goes back, you talk about the old days. In the old days, that's how it would have happened, where guys waited their turn and were paid for things.
But, of course, then, in this day and age, Steve, you know, it's instant gratification, the demand for that. Yeah. And then look at the young man at Clemson. And I know nothing about his situation. This is not an indictment of him at all. Just looking at the midseason. And then the quarterback gets hurt, and he's out for the year, and it would have been his job again.
Yeah.
But he was gone. And I'm not, again, that's not your point. It's just relaying the fact and just to stay. And of course, Nick Saban used him well because of the fact that Alabama was up by 20 and 30 and 40 points virtually every game. Jalen played just about half of every game, maybe a little bit less, but just about half of most every game. So, again, it wasn't the classic backup quarterback scenario. It was a little different and was handled well by the coach and handled very well by two outstanding.
I have to ask you about Tua, because obviously he comes into the national championship game, and you'd see it. I mean, we talked before about, you see this guy in practice, and like, wow.
Yeah, it's
what
unreal.
What makes him a special player, where you can just tell whether it's footwork, delivery, attitude? Is it all of that, Eli?
Well, it's that. I think it's his ability to see the field.
Yeah.
I mean, he's running like crazy, and he, you know, he'll be running to his left, looking to his left, and he'll throw back to his right. Or like the deal last year, again, you know, with Devontae Smith to win the national championship game. I mean, looking off the secondary, looking right, and then at the last second, flicking it down the left side. I mean, like an NFL veteran, and this guy was a freshman in college. He is gifted. He is gifted. So that's the bottom line. He has magnificent skills. But you're right. We'll see him do stuff on the practice field. I'll watch the occasional practice, like on Thursdays of each week during the regular season when I'm doing the coach's talk show. I'll swing by beforehand, and you'll watch him do stuff, and you just shake your head, and you say, "How does a human being do that?" And
right.
and you know, and what that has also done, and not that you've asked, but I'll interject here. What that has also done is taken the one area of concern for Alabama going into the season, which was the talent but inexperience of the secondary.
Right.
And then every day, now, of course, now we're, 13 games, and so they're not true freshmen anymore. But every single day in practice, those very talented newcomers, freshmen, junior college transfers, those very talented guys who had virtually no experience at this level were working every single day against what was arguably one of the top offenses in America. They had to stop Jerry Jeudy and Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle and Ruggs and deal with Tua and deal with Jalen Hurts. And that helped that secondary really improve markedly and get a lot more experience, and that's one of the big things that folks were kind of concerned about going in that turned out not to really be a problem.
Eli Gold, the play-by-play voice of Alabama football. They play Oklahoma tomorrow night in the Orange Bowl. We'll come back with more in a moment. Next half hour, Rich Scarsella, Reading Eagles. We continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK from the Sunbury Motor Studio. Today's show is brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Thanks to Tom Leach, the play-by-play voice of Kentucky, Eli Gold, the play-by-play voice of Alabama. Next half hour, Rich Scarsella is going to join us. Looking forward to that very much. Always enjoy my talks with Rich, who brings great insight to the show all the time. If you missed anything, check out the Steve Jones Show podcast. It'll be right there for you, and you can take a look at it and or listen to it. And, you know, it's I'll tell you, the podcast numbers have been great. From everything we understand. Now, we do get the readouts from guess who. So I don't know if they're accurate or enough. But we've been told the podcast numbers are really good. I mean, I feel, Matt, that you feel internally you have to be as supportive of, as possible of the suit. But, you know.
Well, of course. Actually, I get those same numbers, and they are true.
Well, if you're saying so, then I'm there. It's just when he tells me, I just feel like it's very uncomfortable. All right, so it's not funny. That's our guy getting it done. He's getting it done. Oh, my goodness. All right, so Purdue right now is they're not doing well. It's 56-7 Auburn.
Wow.
Early in the third quarter. And Auburn's driving again. Look, Gus, after this drive, and I can understand your opening drive of the second half. I got that. So I would play my starters. After this, okay, back it off. You know, put a bunch of guys in that never play. Let them have the thrill of playing in a bowl game. He's got to back off. I mean, Stidham is still in a quarterback up 56-7. Are you kidding me? What's the point? I know Gus is 1-4 in bowl games at Auburn. Hey, I've got enough experience doing this, Matt, to pull Gus aside and say, I think you got this one. I think you're okay.
It sounds like it, yeah. And actually, this would be the second bowl game that's been like a crazy blowout like that, because Army won their bowl game, I think it was a couple days ago, like 70-14, I think the final
was.
Yeah,
crush Houston.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
There's one dope pick Houston. That one I do remember, and Auburn just scored again.
And their, I guess, he reporter shall not be named.
No, I'll just say it straight out, I did. That was brilliant. And no, just, yeah, I'm just going along. Yeah, Houston, fine. I put like no effort into this, but that's no excuse. I mean, okay, Gus, you gotta put in the seconds and thirds. You can't keep doing this. I mean, the first drive of the second half, I absolutely understand you play your first. I got that. But now at this point, you got to bring other people in. You got to do it. You know, it's the other part about watching these bowl games, and I've been watching. I watched all of that Baylor game last night, Baylor-Vanderbilt. I watched a good chunk of Wisconsin-Miami. I had to leave, though, to do the network show last night on basketball in downtown State College. Then I came back and watched the end. I watched good portion of the early game too yesterday. And I'll tell you, the number of transfers out there is stunning. I mean, the number of transfers, unbelievable.
Add that to the list. Brandon Wimbush of Notre Dame just announced he was transferring yesterday.
Yeah, I think he's staying with Notre Dame through the bowl game, though, right?
I'm not 100% sure about that.
I think he wants to be a grad transfer so he can. And I'm watching this kid last night, Keyshawn Vaughn. I'm thinking, I know Keyshawn Vaughn. I think I did a game with Keyshawn Vaughn. Turned out he was from Illinois. Transferred over to Vanderbilt. Ran for 240 yards last night. Are you kidding me? I mean, there are transfers all over the place.